and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan's State of the City Address, recorded at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on Monday, September 19th. Hear from Mayor Dan Sullivan next on KSKA's Addressing Alaskans after the news. This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans. This week's program with Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan was recorded on Monday at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. You can find a link to the mayor's slideshow presentation at the chamber on alaskapublic.org.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce's Make It Monday Forum. I'm Bill Evans, and I'm now officially the past chair of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. And I'm here today to wrap up some last-minute details for my year and to officially recognize our new chair. At this time, it's my great honor and not inconsiderable relief to formally introduce you to the 2011 and 2012 Anchorage Chamber Board Chair. Bruce Bustamante is Vice President of Community and Public Affairs for Princess Cruises, which explains why his board nickname is Princess. And he's a little bit spoiled, too. Bruce has lived and worked in Anchorage for nearly 20 years. Prior to Princess Cruises, many of you know Bruce as the former president and CEO for the Anchorage Convention and Visitors Bureau, a position he held for 7 years. One of Bruce's major achievements during that tenure with ACVB is the building we are now in, the Denina Center. Bruce's tireless efforts, as well as many others, were crucial in getting this great facility built. Bruce currently serves as the 2011-2012 chair of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and also serves on the executive committee of the Anchorage Economic and Development Corporation. He also serves on many boards of several other organizations in town. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you your new chair, Bruce Bustamante.
Well, thank you for that nice introduction, I think. Except for that princess part. I should have had a chance to look at it first. But anyway, I really look forward to being the chair this coming year for the Anchorage Chamber. And I've had a chance to serve on the board a number of years. And now I just really enjoyed working with the group, the committed group we have serving on the board of directors, and also with past presidents like Bill Evans that'll continue to stay engaged in this organization. Today, Mayor Dan Sullivan is here to deliver his State of the City address and give an overview of the city's finances and what his administration has accomplished over the past year. He'll also discuss the upcoming budget challenges for 2012. And in the event that there's a question or two that pop up, you've got paper on your table there, so just go ahead and write down your question and hold it up, and we'll have a staff member come by and we'll try to get through as many questions as possible as time will allow at the end. So now what I'd like to do is introduce the distinguished members of the head table. Well, to my immediate right, outgoing chair and part-time comedian, Bill Evans. Thank you. Next to Bill, of course, we have our... Mayor Dan Sullivan. And next to Dan, we have Lauren Stockard, Business Relations Manager with Advantial Credit Union. Next, the Anchorage Chamber would like to take a moment to recognize someone in our audience today, and that is Eddie P., owner of Atta Sports and Promotions, and he was recently named Ambassador of the Month for the Anchorage Chamber for his above and beyond service to the Anchorage Chamber's Ambassador Council. In the past year, Eddie P. has helped maintain connections with other Anchorage Chamber members while promoting the Anchorage Chamber as a whole through its events and programs, including moderating the popular Speed Networking event, and 2 weeks ago he was our MC at the Gold Pan Awards. Okay, now it's time for today's presentation. Mayor Dan Sullivan is a fourth-generation Alaskan and the third of nine children of Anchorage pioneers George and Margaret Sullivan. Dan was elected chair of the Anchorage Chamber Assembly in 2006, and he also served 3 full terms on the Assembly. Sullivan is the founder and co-owner of McGinley's Pub in downtown Anchorage, and since 1986, he has also been a small business owner of Sullivan & Associates, the firm that specializes in government relations and business development consultancy. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our mayor, Dan Sullivan.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Honored to be here. This is my third State of the City address, and you know, 2 weeks ago I actually had to follow Eddie P. up under the days when he was hosting the Gold Pans, and really very fortunate I'm not following him again because he's a very dynamic guy, and so appreciate that. State of the City addresses typically follow a similar pattern because, quite frankly, city government does certain things. It provides public safety. It supposedly takes your hard-earned money and spends it wisely and maintains a good financial stability. We certainly want to maintain our streets, our roads, our parks, and we want to make sure that as we're doing all that, we're doing it as efficiently as possible. So what we are going to do today is give you the report card over the last year on just what we've accomplished, and we can't really grade ourselves. That's up to you, and there's actually an election in April, and you get a chance to give that grade at the ballot box. So we'll start with really just the strategic plan of Anchorage. Like any business, it helps to have a vision. It helps to know where you're trying to go, or else you never quite know when you get there. So our mission is to provide and maintain effective and fiscally responsible municipal services that foster a high quality of life. And the vision elements that flesh out that mission are: we want exemplary municipal operations. We want this to be always a safe place to call home. We want a great, flourishing, broad-based economy. It has to be a really quality of life place where it's inviting to live, to work, and play. And we want to be a premier destination so we can share all those attributes with the rest of the world. And I think we do pretty good in all of those vision elements. The first thing that is always essential for a city is to be financially stable. You really cannot accomplish the other things you want to do in terms of public safety or quality of life or maintaining your facilities if you're not a financially viable institution, whether it's a business or a government. One of the things that we've really worked on over the last couple of years is making sure that the budget savings, the operating reserves of the city of Anchorage were restored to the levels that are required by law. As you can see, in 2007, we started slipping below the required fund balances, they're called, or the operating reserves. In 2008, those reserves were dramatically deplenished. And so in 2009, one of our goals coming in was to make sure that we saved enough money through frugal management to get those fund balances back to their required levels. As you can see, the blue bar in 2009, that represents the 8.25% operating reserve that you have to maintain in order to keep your bond ratings. And then the red one above it is our emergency reserve in case there are any incidents that happen and you want to make sure you have funds to deal with a traumatic occurrence in your community. By 2010, we not only were able to maintain those operating reserves, but a couple other additional categories were added there. We do have a tax settlement on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline that brings several millions of dollars into the city. We've held it in reserve because that case is still being litigated, and we may not know whether we get to keep that money or not. So it's now parked in our operating reserves, but again, hands off until the final court decisions. And then you can see at the top, we've actually been able to, at the end of 2010, even have additional monies. And this is important to talk about because the reason that we did this was not just because it's always a good thing to do to try and be frugal and maybe not spend as much as you were allowed to spend, but we quite frankly have liabilities, both 2009 and 2010, and liabilities going forward that are very important for us to have monies to pay. And you can see this, what the savings were used for. Some people, I think, were critical of the fact that, well, gosh, you said you've got a budget problem, yet you ended up the year and you had money left over. And again, we did that strategically. We were extremely frugal in every department to make sure that we were able to have funds to pay off these liabilities without coming back to you, the taxpayer, and asking you for more money, because quite frankly, you're not responsible for these liabilities. For example, MLMP, Jim Posey's here from MLMP, had loaned the city several years ago over $3.5 million. But when we came into office, we found that there was no provisions, no set-aside made to pay that money back. So we had to be frugal, save money, so that we could pay back that loan, which was due this year. we wanted to make sure that we had money to fund two environmental cleanups that were on the books when we came into office. Kincaid Park, as you may recall, the biathlon range out there during the building of several soccer fields. Lead from the biathlon range was improperly spread over a wide area, and the EPA doesn't quite like that very much, and so nearly $1 million to clean up that project. Reeve Boulevard, another environmental cleanup, the Glen Square project, PCB-laden dirt was moved from one site to another. That has to be cleaned up. Both those cleanups are going on this year, and it takes money to do them, between $800,000 and $1 million for each project. So again, when people say, you know, why were you being so frugal and creating this this extra savings, that's the reason why. You have to do it. So this gives an indication on this chart of really what has been the spending trend in government. And as you can see, we've done a really good job of taking an unsustainable spending trend and getting it back into a sustainable level. You see the growth chart right there. That represented about 8% growth a year in city government at a time when inflation was probably 2.5%. Clearly unsustainable. So we've got, I think, back on a good course where in 2009 and 2010, those budgets those years were both around $421 million. We came in $12 to $13 million under budget. And I got to tell you, that almost never happens in government. The trend is to spend every dime you're given. And I think we've now created a new culture of thrift in government. And not, again, just because it's the right thing to do, but because of these liabilities, it's something you had to do. And these savings also allowed us to fund the police academy that'll be happening this fall. That's a one-time expense, and you don't usually want to use one-time monies for ongoing operations, but for one-time expenses, it's an appropriate place to spend your one-time monies. So again, I want to thank, I've got a bunch of my directors in the room here today. They have done an outstanding job of bringing a new culture of proper fiscal management to city government. 2011 budget, we see some increases over the year before. We're going to collect about $225 million this year. This budget's already set, of course, and so the tax levies have gone out, so we know pretty exactly what those property taxes are going to be. Represented about a 1.7% increase. Just to give you some perspective, the CPI is about 2.6%. So again, we're under inflation, which is a necessary balance, because when you spend 4 years several times greater than the amount of inflation, the pendulum has to swing back to bring you into balance. The major cost increases from 2010, as you can see, labor and benefits about $18 million, debt service about $14 million. And then the police and fire retirement fund, like everybody's fund, when the market crashed in 2008, the actuarials informed us that fund was underfunded and we have to put money in to restore it. The good news is in 2010, that number was $12 million. And so the improvement in the market has reduced that amount that's required actuarially to put in. The bad news is that as the market is now going through fluctuations again, looking forward to 2012, if the market does not improve, or if it shows, a worsening, you'll probably see that number go up again for the 2012 budget. The other, obviously, as we talked about, one of the main priorities of any community is you have to provide a safe community. And, you know, it's really easy to talk about quality of life, and you've heard me say this before, but you can have the best parks, the best trails, the best public facilities, but if you don't feel safe going out and using them, then really the quality of life means nothing, despite the fact you might have great facilities. Pleased to report that in 2010, which is our latest figures, the crime rates are down in Anchorage. You can see the statistics: murder down 7%, forcible rape 6%, robbery 15%, burglary 24%, motor vehicle theft 6%. And we did have two categories that actually increased: aggravated assault and larceny, up 4%. So the chief of police is here, and if he wants to chime in, I'll let him. But he, in announcing these statistics, I think he's made it very clear that the reason for the improvement is we're really focusing more on street-level crime. You know, those people who are committing those crimes usually commit several crimes. And also the fact that we have a very well-trained, highly dedicated police force that goes out every day and does a great job for us. We, of course, over the year, last year, had the incidents of two officers being shot. And I think that really rededicated both the force and the city as a whole to making sure that, you know, we were going to do our darndest to make sure that those incidents don't happen again. And again, focusing on the street level crime, I think, has really made a difference. A traffic accident report just came out. We're down 17% overall over the decade in terms of accidents, collisions, injuries, Vehicle pedestrian collisions and fatal crashes are all down. The one incident that seems to be growing is the vehicle-bicycle collisions as more and more people start riding their bikes. You know, with all the new road construction over the last number of years, you know, adding bike lanes and more, I guess, encouragement for bikers to be on the road, I think we're seeing more accidents because of that. Just a lot more people riding their bikes. And so we really urge people to be extra aware. You know, this is a phenomenon that's growing in Anchorage despite being a winter city. People are riding their bikes more and more, even in the wintertime. The other thing we were, along with the police union and ourselves, we were successful in Juneau in getting funding for a couple of new items, including the initial funding for the law enforcement tactical range. I think we got about $1.5 million to start the initial planning and design. This will be a multi-use statewide facility which will allow law enforcement agencies from around the state to have the best possible training facility so that they can do their job even better. And then, of course, the in-car video equipment and new equipment in terms of rifles and tasers. So look out. We're well armed. Fire protection, we same thing. Obviously, the second leg of the stool on public safety is indeed our fire department. Chief Hall is here today. We have a couple great things. You know, starting in 2010, we stopped the rolling closures where no longer is there any equipment out of service on any given day, which was done by the acting mayor as a budget-saving measure. But our commitment to public safety, we eliminated the rolling closures immediately. And we've been fighting for, you know, better equipment, better stations. We have two new fire stations currently fully funded. The East Anchorage Station is under construction right now, which is, I think, the picture you see there with the backhoe. We'll be starting work on the Spinard Station pretty soon. And both the Airport Heights and Huffman Stations are, I think, almost fully funded. We're not quite ready to move forward on those ones yet. Later this week, we'll be officially welcoming the new Medic 7, which is the Sand Lake Ambulance, which the voters approved in a bond a couple years ago. And we've purchased the equipment, we've got the staffing, and we're ready to go forward with the ambulance. We accepted a SAFER grant, which is a federal grant that allows us to essentially hire new firefighters because we were getting to the level where we did not have adequate staffing. Overtime was getting out of control, and quite frankly, we have to maintain minimum staffing per contract. So this grant allows us to meet our staffing needs. No matching funds were required. It's a two-year grant. And as you see as well, a fire academy just completed. I think we now have 29 new firefighters, and I've met these men and women, and just a great new bunch, and they're going to be a great asset to the fire department. And then same thing, success with the legislature, both through our efforts and through the efforts of the fire department union, who go down there and advocate for their guys. And it's we got a new rescue boat, we have new CPR devices, and we've got monies to replace aging trucks and engines. So good story all the way around on public safety. Homelessness has been in the news a lot, and rightfully so. You know, we've got any number of incidents over the last couple years that really have highlighted the need to take a much more proactive approach. You know, the amount of violence that's being committed in those camps as campers in an intoxicated or otherwise impaired state, commit crimes upon each other. And most recently, we saw a homeless person beaten by young individuals. So it's important for us to really keep our efforts up on homelessness. We were successful in getting the assembly to pass our cold weather plan ordinance. This allows churches and other facilities, if they can get certified with making sure they have enough bathrooms and living space to actually take in homeless people and families on those days when it gets below 32 degrees and people don't have a place to stay, we can expand the capacity of places like Brother Francis Shelter and allow our other institutions, particularly our faith-based institutions, to take in people and assist them. So it's really a great step forward. We are continuing our efforts to clear out the illegal camps. You know, it's a part of that statement I said earlier that if you don't feel comfortable using your public facilities, you should never have to be concerned about who's lurking in a park where you want to take your family or who's lurking on a bike trail as you want to enjoy some of our beautiful trails. And so we're going to keep up that aggressively. But as we've said before, we're not just trying to squeeze people from one camp to another. We are truly trying to hook these people up with the proper social service agencies that can help them. And we've got our Daryl Hess, our homeless coordinator, Diane Engel, our director of DHHS, have been working really hard to put together all the right people and connect them with those individuals in need, and I think we're doing a great job of it. I think you're all familiar with Carlock Manor. This is where the chronic public inebriate, those that are literally dying in the streets and the parks because of their severe alcoholism, will now have a place to basically be off the streets. It's not a dry facility, but at the same time, you know, these are people that have been in numerous treatments, really at an incorrigible state. And, you know, there's mixed emotions about facilities like this, but is it better to have people dying in your streets and in your parks, or in a facility where at least there's an opportunity for them to get some care? And the statistics show that they actually decrease their drinking when they have a shelter, a home. So Projects Homeless Connect works every year, a couple major campaigns each year to get homeless people connected with both job opportunities, social service agencies, and everything literally from baths and toiletries and all those things that can improve their life. As you've seen, we relaunched our Change for the Better campaign. This is the campaign where we really reach out to the community and say, do not give money to panhandlers. All you're doing is buying them a drink. And I mean, this is literally 99.9% of the time, you're just helping their spiral into degradation. If you want to help out, you give money to one of the social service agencies that are being very effective out there, whether it's Catholic Social Services or Salvation Army or Lutheran Social Services or, I mean, Red Cross, any of the groups that respond, that's where you need to give your money. So if you're ever at all tempted and you see a panhandler, and sometimes it is really the most pathetic looking situation, and rightfully so, because these people are in a bad way, you do not help them by giving them money. And then finally, block grants. We've given out millions of dollars over the last couple of years to various agencies so they can add housing, both temporary shelter and permanent housing in the community. You know, the challenge of affordable housing in Anchorage with our cost of living, cost of materials, really is a challenge. So we'll continue to do our part to help increase the housing stock. Energy has always been one of my top priorities. You know, upon taking office and realizing that, you know, the supply of gas in Cook Inlet was not only diminishing, but the deliverability of it on a very cold winter day was coming into question. And so we immediately formed our Energy Task Force, which has been a very, very active group, really at the forefront of creating both awareness about the energy situation, but also advocating for key elements of change. And some members of my task force are here. I see Judy Brady, who is my first chair, Marianne Pease. I think I saw Dave Harbour. If I missed anybody, I apologize. But these guys have really taken the lead. And what resulted in 2010 was two pieces of legislation that have been absolutely critical. One allowed for credits for gas storage in Cook Inlet. NSTAR by 2012 will have that first gas storage facility complete. The second bill, the Cook Inlet tax credit, if you've been reading the news at all, if you read the petroleum news or Journal of Commerce, there is a lot of activity in Cook Inlet. Not only has Escapeta brought up the first jackup rig to Cook Inlet in over 20 years, Buccaneers following up with another one. Jackup rigs essentially are main drilling platforms to go find new oil and gas. And so smaller independents are doing it. People like Buccaneer and people like Cook Inlet Energy, Link Energy, Armstrong. There's just, as typical in what happens in a mature oil and gas field, the big guys aren't interested in punching in 1,000 little holes. They want to have those big finds. And you see it now, of course, with Chevron selling out to Hillcorp and again, the interest in Cook Inlet from the independents. They just had a lease sale in Cook Inlet, one of the most successful ones in many, many years. So we also just today at a press conference with, along with Mayor Carey from the Kenai Peninsula and Mayor DeVillibus from the Mat-Su Borough, announced once again our Energy Watch campaign. Energy Watch is where we ask all of you in the community to, on a given day, this will be October 19th this year, from 6 to 8 p.m., we just ask everybody to take part in our little experiment of what could we really do if the deliverability was coming into question. Could we actually save the day by you participating, turning your heat down a bit, not using that gas range, don't do the laundry that day, or don't run the dishwasher. You know, it. So far, we've done this twice with savings between 3% and 5% of the energy consumption, and it's almost all measured in gas because most of our energy, whether it's electricity or heat, comes from gas. So we'll be asking you again to participate October 19th, 6 to 8 p.m. And since you're all metered, we'll know who does and who doesn't. So we'll be keeping an eye on you. So yeah, we hope for your support there. you know, again, back to priorities, we want to have a well-maintained city, and part of our goal is to make sure we keep up on deferred maintenance and maintain the assets that we already own. And so far, I tell you, over the last 2 years, I've heard more compliments for those folks in our maintenance departments, both in the park and rec department and in our street and sidewalk maintenance people. They've been doing a great job, and they've been doing it with fewer resources than they had in the past. And you can see the statistics. You know, we had a great effort this year on park rehabilitation, hundreds of volunteers. We had, of course, our youth and employment parks projects, 12 community parks, which leverages all sorts of funds from the private sector, including Rasmussen Foundation and others. If you've been out on the section of the Coastal Trail that was resurfaced, it's beautiful. Our goal is every year to get another section of the Coastal Trail, which is truly one of our community gems, get that revitalized and looking good again. Somebody asked me one time, and you've probably heard me say this before, about, well, gosh, why don't we extend that Coastal Trail another 20 miles? Well, if you can't maintain the trail you have now, you'd have no business building another 18, 20 miles of trail. So our goal is we're going to get our trail system really renewed, and so really for the next 10, 20 years, people can enjoy it the way it's supposed to be. And I love the statistic, over 100,000 volunteer hours in 2010, and we haven't got the final stats in on 2011 yet because we're just finishing the season, but really tremendous effort. I see Kathy Janico from the Parks Department is here, and thanks for all your work and for all your team.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans. This week's program with Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan was recorded on Monday at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. You can find a link to the Mayor's slideshow presentation at the Chamber on alaskapublic.org.
One of the things that we focused on in our capital requests for in Juneau this year was trying to get our Project 80s facilities renewed. We had about a $10 million request. We didn't quite get all the money we want, so quite frankly, we'll be going back to Juneau next year and asking for more, because these, again, along with the Coastal Trail, are the gems of our community. It's what makes the quality of life here outstanding. And I didn't list the PAC and Dempsey Anderson because they didn't have specific projects this year, but they will going forward. But the Lusac Library, as we know, the entrance, that stairway, all needs major rehabilitation. We've got new locker rooms being improved in the Sullivan Arena right now. They're almost done. Really, as other teams come to visit us, the visiting locker rooms and the facilities there were really subpar, and just, again, upgrades at the Egan and the Ben Boeke. Street and sidewalk clearing, as I mentioned before, we've been getting great kudos for that. We have really tried to streamline operations and focus on the high-priority sidewalks. Going to schools, of course, is always a top priority. And we're working much better with the state on making sure that we have a cooperative effort so that we coordinate who does what and when. And again, I think the results have been pretty good. A lot of road projects this year. You've been driving around Anchorage. I think everybody, no matter what neighborhood you live in, you probably at one time or another have a blockade up or a detour. Obviously, we have to do this work in the summer so that in winter, you can have some safe driving. So it's... these are the kind of the top ones. 40th Avenue, which is a key connection into the UMed district, into, where Providence Hospital and all of its facilities. 9th Avenue is finished. And again, you can see the other projects. Again, something in just about everybody's neighborhood. These top 10 was about $33 million in projects. Overall, I think we spent probably over $70 million in road projects this year and probably a similar number next year. So it's ongoing. When you live in a winter city, it's tough on roads. And this is something that you have to do every year. And the process, some people ask, well, how come my road doesn't make the list? You always start with your community council. You have them prepare their capital list. They send it to our project management team. They go and then drive all the roads and see which ones are in the worst shape in their professional opinion. And they construct then the list that either we go to the legislature with or we put on the bonds for you voters to approve. So there's a good process, but if you need yours called to attention, start with your community council. That's the best place. Those lists are usually turned into the city in February, so you've got a few months to get active with your councils. We've also been really working internally to try and make government more efficient. Government, by its very nature, does not normally seek out efficiencies like you do in the private sector. Private sector, you're trying to make a profit. You want to make sure you're delivering service as well as possible and as inexpensively as possible, and offering good customer service in the meantime because you want those customers to come back. It doesn't always happen that way in government, but we're really working to improve that. And as the notice says, we're trying to serve the public online, not in line. And now online, you can do all sorts of things that you couldn't before, whether it's bus passes, dog licenses, public notices, what's the status of permits, your APD citations. And then we're trying to move to really a whole paperless system, which really will save the city millions and millions of dollars in the long run. It's payroll, time cards, pay stubs, you'd be amazed at how much the city still does manually, where most progressive businesses by this stage have gone to electronic time cards throughout their system. And it's time for Anchorage to get into the modern age and time for us to go truly electronic, like, again, most businesses have done some time ago. On the payroll time card, a system called Kronos is being implemented right now, hope to be done by July of next year, at which time we'll really start seeing the savings from that. New enterprise resource planning, a company called SAP is doing our ERP, and I don't know what any of that means, but they say it saves a lot of money. So call Lucinda Mahoney, the CFO. She'll explain it all to you. Raise your hand, Lucinda. She's not going to. We also, as you may know, have an efficiency RFP out on the streets. The award was given to CH2M Hill. CH2M Hill is looking at our fleets, our maintenance, and our facility maintenance to see if there's savings that can be achieved because this is one of their expertises. They manage thousands of pieces of equipment on the North Slope for oil companies. Around the country, they've actually taken over the management of numerous city functions from a management level where they can really look and find efficiencies based on the business models that they're familiar with. And so far, in other jurisdictions where we've examined and reviewed their performance, it literally has resulted in millions of dollars in savings just from, again, being more efficient in how we manage equipment. And then finally, each department is now required to construct performance measures. We need to know what their goals are. We need to know how they're going to accomplish their goals and how they're going to measure that they accomplish their goals so that you, the public, can see that your tax dollars are being spent effectively. And all this is online as far as the performance measures and the results of all the various departments. One thing we always hear at budget time when people come testify is that, you know, I love the libraries, I love the parks, I'm willing to pay more taxes. Well, we now have Gift Anchorage where you can pay more money to city government if you want to. You can make a voluntary contribution to support a city service. You go to muni.org, you click on Gift Anchorage, and you can see the various departments that, if you like the pools, the flowers, if you like police, public health, any of the above, you have the opportunity to donate. So all those people who testify in the future, we're going to direct you immediately to muni.org. Here's how you can give more tax if you're willing to do so. Now, one thing they didn't put in there was the mayor's office, so I am almost out of pencils, by the way, so if you guys, when you go to Gift Anchorage, you can keep me in mind here. So, all right, the port expansion. There's been a lot of talk about the port. What the heck's going on down at the port? Who's in control? Why are things so crazy down there? Well, I'll tell you, when we came into office in 2009, it was reported to us. In fact, it had actually been in our transition report that had problems with the construction, that some of the sheet piles that were driven in clearly were not being installed properly. So literally for the last 2 years, we have been in damage control mode, pulling sheet piles out, examining the work to date, and so we've actually lost about 2 years of construction season as we've examined what's gone wrong. And so one of the things that we've discovered was that the agreement that was set up between the municipality, the port, and MARAD, the Maritime Administration, who is the federal agency responsible for the overall construction project, was an agreement that nobody in this room with any sense would have signed in the first place. There was no oversight committee that included the city and the port. There was no full-time project manager here from MARAD. There was no indemnification for the MOA in case there was any damage to the port operations, which we estimate to be over $50 million worth of impact so far. And so we're now, of course, working with both the Corps of Engineers and MARAD to set up a whole new system. There's an operations and construction audit that's going to be conducted by the Corps. We're still working out the final details of that MOU. We've scaled down the project to an affordable design. The estimate to complete the original design was another $900 million. We've got that down to about $350 million, and that'll be a design that will allow our major shippers, Horizon and Tote, to have a proper berthing place, as well as having a wet and a dry barge berth. It will be an operable port for years to come, Eventually, we'd like to finish those other phases, but the first goal was to regain confidence with our legislature, who, quite frankly, when they saw another $900 million price tag, they weren't very interested. So we've worked very, very hard to make sure this project is back on track. And again, there's a misconception that the port was managing this project. Bill Sheffield and his port crew, their job was to operate the port while the construction project was going on next to them. It was operated by MARAD and their main contractors. So right now, there's an awful lot of legal action going on between the various contractors. Who's to blame for the bad construction? What went wrong? And so we're watching that very closely, obviously. The other thing, of course, you may have heard is that the city filed suit against the Kinnickarn Bridge and Toll Authority. I support the project 100%, but there was a choke point right behind the port where the access road to the bridge would have to pass that actually impacted port operations. The port's one of our most valuable assets. I cannot allow anything to impact those operations. So we've been working cooperatively with Kubota to try and work out a new route alignment. If they can just move a little bit to the east and maybe we scale down a little bit to the west, I think we can find a right-of-way that works for everybody. Absolutely important that this happen because, again, the port may be not only, it's not only the most valuable asset for the city, it may be one of the most single valuable assets for the entire state of Alaska, because you all know the statistic, over 80% of all the goods that enter Alaska come through the Port of Anchorage, which is why we now call it the Port of Alaska. So we're working together. I think we'll find a solution. The judge has set aside the lawsuit temporarily, thinking that we'll probably get there. We've got some economic development ideas on the horizon. You can't just be about doing what you're doing. Sometimes you have to look and see what you can do going forward. I was just in South Carolina at the Mayor's Institute on City Design. I took them our Ship Creek project, which is really one of the most underdeveloped waterfronts with frontage to the Pacific Ocean. I've talked about this in past State of the City addresses, but now we've been working closely with the railroad to actually see if we can't solicit some interest in, you know, a new development concept there. The Mayor's Institute had architects and designers and planners from all over the country, leading names who help mayors get a vision beyond the vision point and into actual project. So as you can see, the yellow areas on the map there, this is all railroad leasehold land, but these are areas that are prime for development. This is kind of the gateway into Anchorage. Ultimately, I'd like to see cruise ships park out on this end instead of at the industrial dock so that the first impression people have when they come to Anchorage as a visitor on a cruise ship is something spectacular. And ideas in the past have, of course, included aquariums and salmon research centers. And for whatever reason, either timing wasn't right or they just never got off the ground. But we're gonna keep working this. We think it's got great potential. Our Health and Human Services building at 9th and L Street, we have an RFP out for a new headquarters for DHHS, which will allow us to then sell the 9th and L property and get it into private sector hands. It's a beautiful location at 9th and L Street, right on the Park Strip. I'd like to see this property on the tax rolls. I'd like to see something really both fitting in the area, but at the same time, private enterprise develop that into something special on that corner. And again, if we can find better location for DHHS, more, I guess, in the direction of the of their people they serve. We're trying to look more towards kind of the northeast area of Anchorage. That's where socioeconomically most of the people who use DHHS services live, and so it's more appropriate for them to be located in that area. Tourism's up. Julie Soppy's here. I think we've had a good year this year so far, and I don't know the exact percentages, but we are seeing growth returning, and that helps our bottom line because the bed tax, we get a third of it into city government, so that's a help. Film industry, we got, seems like, a new film announcement every week. That's really a interesting new growth industry for Anchorage and for all of Alaska. And once again, good film incentive credits lead to good business opportunities. And then finally, Title 21. We're working on getting a version ready for the Planning and Zoning Commission to review. And then after that, the Assembly will review it. So there's going to be, I know there's been concerns that, gee, you know, you guys are doing all this work and nobody gets to see it yet. But there's going to be a very public process going forward. Planning and Zoning Commission has public hearings. They have many weeks worth of time to accept public comments. And then it goes to your Assembly, you know, who you elect to represent you. And once again, you'll get a chance to say your piece and to make your comments. So it's still an internal work product at this stage. But very, very soon, well, in fact, really, I think within a week or so, we'll be ready to send that forward. One thing I'm working on in conjunction with the school district, with the universities, with business leaders, with the unions, with private school owners, with interested parents, is the Mayor's Education Summit. It'll be held November 15th and 16th. We're bringing in some top names from around the country who have been leaders in educational reform, really looking at new ideas, new concepts to try and improve performance wherever possible. We have a really good school district, and our goal is to have a really great school district. In fact, the goal really is to be the best school district in the United States, something that other schools will come look at us and say, how did you do it? And so we start off with the two-day summit, where we have about 100 people from around the community participate, all people who can help affect change. Like I said, business leaders, school board, school administration, university leaders, people from private schools, people from the community. So it's limited in scope, but then we go out to the public in February, and this will have an opportunity to reach thousands of people, take the ideas from the summit, share it with the public, see what you think, and then we'll finish up with the 100 people without the guest presenters in June for the Capstone Summit, where we really put together an action plan going forward of those 6, 7, 8 ideas that can really happen, that can be transformational. So we're looking forward to that, and obviously we'll keep you posted. Okay, so Pat Doyle, don't look at the screen. I stole this from you. Who's up, who's down? Every Sunday you see this in the Anchorage Daily News. Taxpayers, things are looking up for you. We've held the line on spending. We've held the line on property taxes. Taxes and spending crowd, sorry, things aren't looking so good if you're a big spender. Criminals, sorry, we're doing a good job of putting you where you belong. Energy, still a little iffy. I'm still a little concerned about this coming winter, but that's going to be an up arrow next time we meet. And the quality of life in Anchorage, I think, clearly improved just because of a great job our staff is doing maintaining our facilities and making sure that those things that lend to the quality of life in Anchorage are well-maintained and accessible to you. So, who's up, who's down? State of our city? I give us an up arrow. We're cleaner, we're safer, we're stronger. And by the way, in 2.5 years, I've never gotten an up arrow from the Anchorage Daily News, but I'd like to think that's a sign we're doing something right. So, sorry, Pat, just had to take a shot. Yeah, well, thank you all very much. That concludes my presentation. Do you want me to answer from my seat?
Well, thank you very much, Mayor Sullivan, for a very comprehensive presentation on accomplishments by you and your administration and the direction we're headed. Actually, we just have one question from the audience, and I think you probably hit this one pretty hard during your presentation, but what are your thoughts and directions to help the South Central energy crisis? And you did talk about tax credits, gas storage, and also the energy watch exercise coming up, but is there anything else you want to add to that?
I think really we're on the right track there. The key, again, is having just as many independents come into this market as possible. Again, they had a very successful lease sale, the last Cook Inlet lease sale. The fact that the incentives are working, again, just goes to show that properly managed incentives do lead to results. And they say that, like I said, we need to drill 18 wells a year in order to truly keep up with demand. We're not quite at that pace yet, so I guess my goal would be going forward to see what we can do to incentivize and encourage even more companies to come up here and drill in Cook Inlet. There's lots of gas. It just takes a lot of effort to find it.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan's State of the City Address, recorded at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on Monday, September 19th. The mayor's slideshow presentation is available on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our new website, alaskapublic.org. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.